You've heard our open themes with listeners talking about their vocations.
Missouri dairy farmers, love issues, etc.
And what they're doing while listening to issues, etc.
This is Mark from Michigan, and I am a lawnmower listener. We love issues, etc.
We're looking for more of these elements to include in our open themes. Tell us about your vocation, hobby, or what you do while listening to Issues Etc. Call the Issues Etc. comment line 24/7 at 618-223-8382. If you make a mistake, just start over. 618-223-8382. Thanks for listening, and thanks for contributing to Issues Etc. 618-223-8382.
I'm very, very serious about my Catholicism, and Hillary views that as a real asset.
Even to say to someone, do you want to have children, or do you want to have another, that is pro-choice language.
So if a student encounters a professor who's interested in gender, race, and class, or LGBT issues, and those issues are going to be the defining frameworks for looking at the past, probably there's a progressive agenda at work.
The more we pray that, come Lord Jesus, the more we are freed to love God and serve our neighbor in the way we conduct ourselves as citizens.
Canadian Pipers love issues, etc.
In a free society like the United States of America, we have laws. This is a nation of laws, not of men, we say. But we also have regulation. And in Roe v. Wade, there is law that is the Supreme Court decision from 1973 that said abortion is not illegal and that it is in a completely unrestricted sense legal for all 9 months of pregnancy. And there's really no reason to regulate it, except they say the health and the well-being of the mother. That was 1973. But abortion remains the least regulated industry in the United States. Regulations go along with laws. It's a way that we make sure the laws continue to go in the right direction. So how is it that someone can order abortion drugs over the internet, take them late in pregnancy, and lead to a horrific story that we read about recently of Purvi Patel, who, well, her child at long last was born alive after she attempted to abort the child, and she left that child in a dumpster and went to a hospital. Who created that situation? We're going to be talking about that and answering that question. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. Live this Friday afternoon, October the 21st. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Clark Forsyth joins us. He's from Americans United for Life. We'll talk about Roe v. Wade and the underregulated abortion industry. Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer joins us after that for part two of our series on the doctrine of justification in the Old Testament. We'll do a little listener email and the Issues Etc. comment line before we play Issues Etc. soundbite of the week. Now, you can vote in advance for soundbite of the week by giving us a call, 1-877-623-6943, sending us an email, talkback@issuesetc.org, a tweet at issuesetc, or, as I said, vote in advance at our Facebook fan page as well, facebook.com/issuesetc, facebook.com/issuesetc. We'll be playing the four soundbites for you, and then you'll vote for Issues Etc. soundbite of the week in the last half hour of the program. Joining us to talk about Roe v. Wade and the underregulated abortion industry, Clark Forsyth, acting president and senior counsel at Americans United for Life, author of the book Abuse of Discretion, The Inside Story of Roe v. Wade, and a recent column for The Federalist titled Blame the Supreme Court, Not Mike Pence, for women stuffing babies into dumpsters. Clark, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thanks, Todd. Good to be with you.
Vice presidential candidate Mike Pence has been recently accused of having some part in the prosecution of a young woman who gave birth to a child prematurely and then left the child dead in a dumpster. Does that accusation hold any water?
Not at all. If the case you're talking about is, you know, is a Purvi Patel case out of Indiana, and it was described by an Indiana court as involving Ms. Patel getting RU-46, mifepristone, and misoprostol off the internet late in a pregnancy in 2013, taking the drugs at 25 or 30 weeks, and then having a late-term abortion of a baby of about 25 to 30 weeks gestation. And after she delivered the child alive, she basically put the child in a dumpster and then went to a hospital. And this happened in Indiana, and as you know, Governor Pence was charged by abortion advocates as responsible for Patel's prosecution. And as I point out in the article in The Federalist, Mike Pence didn't have anything to do with this case. These tragic cases exist because of the Supreme Court's abortion doctrine.
What is that doctrine? Make it as plain as possible. Roe v. Wade, 1973, what has been in place since then by way of the United States abortion doctrine?
The court legalized abortion for any reason at any time of pregnancy across all 50 states.
Period.
That's correct. And it has led to late-term abortions like this that result in live birth and babies left in dumpsters. I mean, this is just the latest of a long series of sorry and tragic cases.
What's the connection there? Explain that.
Well, the court legalized abortion, as you know, up to viability. But even after viability, the court said the states can't do anything about abortion, late-term abortion, even up to birth, if there's a quote-unquote health reason. But number one, they defined health as anything. And number two, they said abortion providers are the last word for whether health, defined as anything, is at stake. And that has lured women into thinking that there's nothing inside them and that they can abort virtually at any time. And as a result, we've had numerous cases of late-term abortions resulting in live birth. And the Purvi Patel case in Indiana just takes it to its logical extreme. She was able to go on the internet, get these drugs, and take them herself at home or somewhere, producing an abortion of a viable baby that was born alive, and then the baby being left in a dumpster.
You say that even now abortion advocates are fighting to expand abortion into infanticide. What do you mean by that?
Well, once the baby's born alive, killing it becomes the killing of an infant or infanticide. We have cases of other mothers, unfortunately, tragically, not considering abortion, but just giving birth, not going to a hospital, giving birth perhaps at home or some private room, and leaving the baby in a dumpster. That's why we have safe haven laws across the country. You know, over the last 20 years, virtually every state has passed a safe haven law, which means that a woman who gives birth, delivers, but doesn't want to care for the child, can leave the child with no questions asked at a safe place, a local fire station, and perhaps a local hospital, an emergency room, and to prevent babies in dumpsters.
So what you're talking about here, Clark, is what attorneys usually, judges usually refer to as the didactic function of the law. That is, laws, good or bad, teach good or bad. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. And the Supreme Court's unlimited abortion doctrine has taught Americans, men and women, that there's no human being inside a pregnant woman. You can have an abortion whenever you want. There's no risks. And it should be unregulated and completely left up to the provider to make the decision at any time for any reason. And that has led to the tragic case of Purvi Patel. Now, abortion advocates were pointing the finger at Mike Pence and saying, well, in Mike Pence's Indiana, you get prosecutions like that. The real problem is in the Supreme Court's America, you get cases like that.
I would like you to address, if you would, the other issue that's in this, and that is that this young woman was able to purchase over the internet drugs that are risky, at the very least, and certainly deadly to the life of the unborn child. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, they're obviously deadly. That's why they're prescribed and taken. They cut off the child's nutrition through the uterus, and then dispel the child, propel the child out, evacuate the child, resulting in a completed abortion in some cases. But they're also, I mean, late-term abortion is increasingly risky for the mother. I mean, after 20 weeks, the maternal mortality rate for abortion goes through the roof. I mean, the risk of death to women goes through the roof. And yet the Supreme Court, without evidence, extended the abortion past the time that it gets extremely risky for the mother as well. And the court has created this unregulated chemical abortion market in which women can get the drugs off the internet and take them in their home.
Do you think that the Roe court, having looked at it in detail, had any way of foreseeing this? Not only the availability of chemical abortion, it's not over the counter, it's through the mails, really. Do you think they had any way of foreseeing this?
The court in 73, as I point out in my book, Abuse of Discretion, should have looked at the contrary evidence. They should have looked at the implications. They chose not to. But some of the things they might have seen but were blindsided by it. I mean, ultrasound, which has permanently changed public opinion, that came on the commercial medical market in the U.S. 3 or 4 years after Roe versus Wade, and I think the judges were blindsided by it. They should not have done what they did because they didn't know what they were doing. I mean, they couldn't have, or perhaps there was no evidence of chemical abortions. They were thinking in terms of surgical abortions. They were thinking about a doctor doing abortions in a hospital at the Mayo Clinic. So they weren't able to see a lot of technological developments like ultrasound and chemical abortion. But they also didn't really want to look at the data anyhow.
Did that court, in effect, create a doctrine of abortion that was it their intent, I guess is what I'm asking, to leave abortion unregulated as it has in so many cases been?
That they did intend that because they had this undocumented myth that abortion's safer than childbirth, very safe, few risks, therefore we're just going to leave it up to the provider. And that myth influenced the entire writing of the Roe versus Wade opinion and all the deference and lack of regulation that they gave to providers. And that has led to all these cases of late-term abortions resulting in live birth and the case of Per V. Patel.
If bad law like Roe teaches bad ideas, what would the reasonable passage of regulations on abortion-inducing drugs, things like that, what would those kind of regulations begin to teach?
Well, at the very least, that there are risks, but I think if the court got out of the way and left it to the American people, you'd see a perfect legal rule across the country from coast to coast, but you would see a much more pro-life public policy state by state, protecting women and protecting unborn children. You would see, I think, the abortion rate drop significantly, perhaps within 3 or 4 years to a few hundred thousand a year instead of the current number of 900,000 to a million. And you would see the law teaching something significantly different about the sanctity of human life.
Finally, can anyone reasonably defend the lack of regulation of the abortion industry in whatever form it takes?
I would say they can't reasonably defend it, and they don't want to. But, of course, you've got a lot of institutions in American society who will defend it at all costs. I mean, you've got wealthy people like George Soros and Warren Buffett, and you've got billion-dollar organizations like Planned Parenthood, and you've got political candidates, and you've got parties who want to do it because they like the unregulated abortion-on-demand climate we've got, and they will defend it. So it means we've got a real challenge and a lot of work ahead. But one of the reasons I wrote the piece in The Federalist today is that when these cases happen or when women are injured or killed in an abortion clinic, people look around for who's responsible, and they look at the local public health official, or they look at the local hospital, or they look at a local politician. But our chaotic abortion situation is ultimately due to the Supreme Court, and the justices are ultimately responsible for perpetuating it.
Clark Forsythe is acting president and senior counsel at Americans United for Life, author of the book Abuse of Discretion, The Inside Story of Roe v. Wade, and a recent column for The Federalist titled Blame the Supreme Court, Not Mike Pence, for Women Stuffing Babies into Dumpsters. You can read it, and you can find out more about abuse of discretion at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Clark, thanks.
Thanks, Todd.
When we come back from this break, we're going to spend some time with Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer. We started a series with him earlier on the doctrine of justification in the Old Testament. We were in the book of Deuteronomy. We're going to spend a little more time there in Deuteronomy and move on to examples of the perversion of justice that God abhors under the topic of justification in the Old Testament with Pastor Brian Ketchelmeyer right after this.
A little tough boy with beautiful brown eyes. I paid for the murder before they determined the sex. Choosing our life over your life meant your death. And you never got a chance to even open your eyes. Sometimes I wonder as a fetus if you fought for your life. Would you have been a little genius in love with math? Would you have played in your school clothes and made me mad? Would you have been a little...
College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois offers ACT, SAT, and PSAT test prep, scholarship application classes, college and career counseling, and more. Hi, this is Lori Konski, president of College Preparation Station. We have helped our students obtain more than $7 million in tuition scholarships in 12 years. Find out more at cpsprep.com. Let us help you create a vision and find your future. The College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois, cpsprep.com.
Are you tired of working nights, weekends, and odd hours trying to cover your bases at home just to make ends meet? At the Cleaning Authority, we call that the multi-job shuffle, and we want to end that for you right now. We'll train you in our proven, efficient cleaning methods, and you'll be partnered to work in pre-qualified homes. Call 314-416-8117 and walk away from the multi-job shuffle with a future in our St. Louis office, 314-416-8117.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Are you a homeschool parent looking for help teaching certain subjects? Or do you want your student to study the history, languages, and literature of Western civilization? Memoria Press Online Academy has live online classes with master teachers to help you. Their teachers have years of experience teaching, delighting, and moving students literally from all around the world. Your homeschool year doesn't have to be difficult. Visit MemoriaPressAcademy.com or call 877-745-8866.
The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for October is a timely, downloadable resource designed for Bible classes. It's titled Called to Vote, A Christian's Approach to Elections. Called to Vote is written by Issues Etc. regular guest Dr. Ken Sherb. You can find out more and download Called to Vote on every page of our website, issuesetc.org. Called to Vote, A Christian's Approach to Elections, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for October, issuesetc.org.